Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, you make resolutions with hopes for improving your life. What about the life of your pet? And maybe how could animal training help you with your own New Year's resolutions? That's one of the great things we're going to be taking up today with our guest, Patricia McConnell, back once again with us, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker extraordinaire, author. She's written many wonderful books. She's co-hosted Calling All Pets with me for a long, long time. We had a lot of fun doing it. But we're here to talk about maybe about your pet's behavior. We're going to talk about how animal training can help you with your own New Year's resolutions. And we'll take your calls. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Patricia McConnell, welcome back.
Oh, it's fun to be here. Hi, Larry.
Do you make New Year's resolutions?
You know, I call them not resolutions, just because we all know how often people fail, right, at resolutions. So, yeah, I have a few, actually. I do. Do you?
I have a few, and a lot of them are, well, there aren't that many, but
Are you saying? Are they... privately held or publicly available?
No. The one in terms of my own health, I vow to continue and keep up and maybe even expand a little, although I do it pretty much every day, my jogs, my 3 miles in the morning, and I want to keep that up. And I want to be a good dad for my daughters.
You are a good dad. Yeah. You're a great dad.
So, and a good companion for Tiger and Coco, our cats.
Yeah, your kitties.
Yeah, so I don't know how much Tiger and Coco can help me with my New Year's resolutions. They can maybe a little bit because I have one of those little rods with the feather on the end
of it. A little fishing pole toy.
And Tiger just loves to race after me around the house. So I guess I get a little exercise.
There you go.
Well, so you're saying animal training can help you with your own New Year's resolution.
Yeah. I was thinking about how common it is for people to make resolutions. And we've all heard the statistics that 90% of them are like failed in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So I was thinking about that in general and also about that personally. You know, because I have a few. And I thought about the fact that there are a lot of principles of animal training that have a lot to tell us about how to keep our, whatever we call them, resolutions or
okay.
not, right? And so number one, is be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give examples for everything. And a lot of them are from my own life because I know from experience that some people imagine that I live in a home where my animals are perfect, which is just, you know, basically a spit take ridiculousness. But job number one is to be realistic, right? You know, what can you really truly accomplish? Am I going to lose 35 pounds? No, not going to happen, right? Am I going to change my life and become, competitive, ice skater? No, not going to happen. And often people are not realistic about what they can accomplish with their pets, too.
Okay.
And so, how many people have I met with who envisioned having this Walt Disney Golden Retriever who slept by the fire when you wanted it to and greeted visitors perfectly? And, So here's an example of being realistic from my house. I have two Border Collies and a Cavalier, King Charles Spaniel, and both Border Collies are exuberant about greeting visitors. Willie especially. Older Willie is especially exuberant. And so I have a couple of choices to make, and the choice I made was a very realistic one because the easiest thing for me to do in my household is to was to train my Border Collies to go into the study when visitors come. So when somebody knocks on the door, somebody pulls in, I say, hey guys, go in your crates. They have crates in the study. They were trained to go into them. And so it's easier for me. I had to do a little bit of training, but it's easier for me, faster, more realistic to say, hey guys, go in your study. And then I shut the door. Then I let in the visitors. And after 10, 15 minutes, things have calmed down. I could train them to be more polite at the door, but it would take 5 to 10 times as long. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I don't have to be perfect. I just have to manage this in a realistic way. So that's one.
What's another one?
The second, funny you should ask, Larry. There are 5, just so you know. Okay. The second one is to be specific. Mm. Be specific and positive. And that's, you know, if you read about resolutions and habit change, that is one of the most important things for all of us to remember is, you know, not just I'm going to be healthier or I'm going to lose weight. You know, I put on 5 holiday pounds, for mm-hmm. example. And so my goal is not just to lose weight. It's to get back to I have a red line weight. You know? Once I get over this red line, it's like, ooga, ooga, dive. So my very specific goal is to get 3 pounds under my red line weight by the end of January. Mm-hmm. Very, very specific. And so, you know, with animals, here's an example with an animal, again, from my farm, is we have 2 kitties, just like you do. They don't live full-time in the house because my allergies are ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm allergic to dogs too, by the way, just so you know. I'm allergic to both dogs and cats, but the cats are way worse. And so one of our kitties, Nellie loves to come in the house, and she's allowed in some, but then she needs to leave. Like this morning, she was in the house, but I needed to leave. I couldn't leave her in there because then she'd get on my bed, etc. So I thought through, so you can imagine the scenario, right? Cat's in the house, needs to go outside. Cat doesn't want to go outside, right?
Yeah.
You can chase the cat. She gets under the table. You can't get, right?
You're
you
know,
under
we
the all,
bed.
We're under the bed. The bed. Right? We all know the scenario, right? So you can get madder and madder and more frustrated. Or you can be positive and specific. So I was like, what do I want my cat to do specifically? And that's go outside when I ask her to. So I took 3 weeks, thought about it, actually wrote out a little plan, and taught her when I say, Nelly, you run outside, you jump on top of a ledge in the garage, and you get a kitty greenie, which I call the cocaine of cat food.
Oh, they love greenies.
Oh, gee, caramba. They're supposed to help the animal's teeth. I'm not so sure they do, given how fast they eat them, but they are very effective reinforcements. So basically, 98% of the time, you can say, Nelly, and she'll run to the door, leap on top of her ledge. So that's number 2. Number 3, you just did it, Larry, which is go public. Make a commitment. So mm-hmm. one of my commitments, one of my non-resolutions that I wrote about in my blog, The Other End of the Leash, just posted it yesterday, is I'm going to try my hand at writing fiction. And I'm scared. I'm literally scared saying that out loud. I literally am. But, you know, everybody who knows me knows I love to write. The Education of the Will. One of my goals for my last book, The Education of Will, my memoir, was to up my writing by several levels. Mm-hmm. And I think I did. Mm-hmm. I feel really proud of that book. I love good writing. I love it. And I love fiction. I read it all the time. I love nonfiction. I love fiction. I read everything. So I made a commitment that for 3 months, for a couple of hours, 3 days a week, I'm going to just play at writing fiction and see how it feels. So again, I was realistic. Did I say I'm going to write a fiction book? No, right? I was specific and I was realistic. I'm going to try it for 3 months and see how it goes. So the 4th is keeping track. Is keeping track of how you're doing, you know? And for me, that's usually in writing. And I know there's research that suggests it is very useful to keep track in writing sort of how you're doing,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you too? You find the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I have, for example, my other border collie, Maggie, is a competition sheepdog trialing dog. I would like to move up to the big class, to open, which is where you're competing with the, you know, equivalent of
the big dogs,
Lindsey Vonn and Andre Agassi. You know, you're competing literally against the best in the country. And so I have a kind of a journal, like a book of notes that I'm taking now on Maggie's training, because I'm incredibly disorganized and I have a horrible memory. But this is forcing me to sort of keep track of things. And then I keep track of how I'm doing with a journal that I write myself just for me in the morning. The last one, and this is probably, well, every one is the most important, right? So this is one of the five most important, which is expect setbacks. It is going to happen. Yeah. And I cannot tell you how many clients I saw when I was seeing clients who were gutted by having a dog who was getting better and better and better. Maybe they were rude and aggressive to unfamiliar dogs they saw while walking on the street on a leash, or, you know, maybe they were didn't come when called. That you see this progress and you go forward and forward, and then there's this big setback. And it can either just devastate you and sort of stop all your forward progress so you can give up, or it can be a time to sort of take a breath, breathe in, keep the faith, figure out what went wrong, learn from it, and move forward. So don't let setbacks devastate you. You know, I'm going to gain weight at some point of the time. I'm going to not write, you know, 1 week's going to go crazy. You know, Larry, you're going to have a day where you don't go jogging, or,
yeah,
you know, you don't play with your cats. And just don't let setbacks get you. Don't let setbacks set you back.
Yeah.
There we are.
And they're all kind of intertwined. I mean, expect setbacks. That's being realistic.
Yes, true. Good point. Absolutely.
Well, we have quite a few people who want to visit with you about one thing or another. So I'll give you the number to call as you listen in, want to join us. The number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's see, Carolyn in Madison is up first. Let's go to Carolyn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Lovely to be able to have access to your expertise. I've read your books. I know a bit and have followed your principles, and they've been successful for a lot of things, like a solid, you know, recall. But I have a five-year-old Springer Spaniel, and I realized that her barking had become really obnoxious, from just annoying to obnoxious. And I've made a little progress. For instance, she was ordering me to throw a ball for her, and
so yo, you,
able, yeah, to make her sit and be quiet. But then I'll throw the ball, and what I can't control is when she chases the ball. It's yak 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 yak. She gets it. She comes back, barks at me, and then I make her sit, and she's quiet. And I throw it again. I guess that's not the worst. But I'll take her to the dog park, and a friend of mine is there with her two dogs, and if there's a stick involved, she is beside herself. And you would not believe her lung capacity for such a small dog. And, you know, I know this isn't it. My husband said, well, you know, hire a professional and work one-on-one. But in these kind of, you know, I know you're supposed to identify what's the stimulus, but, you know, I don't have a lot of control over two, you know, rivals with a stick. So I don't know whether I should just learn to not let it bother me or what I should do.
Oh, I'm so glad you called in a way and not in another, because I wish I had a magic pill for you. I would give anything to, in part because our Cavalier at home often barks, often, when we don't want her to. So have I completely solved this problem and wrapped up in it? No, I have not. So a couple of things, and just in general, before we talk about, you know, what to do, one of the things that's important to keep in mind is that this kind of barking is about emotional arousal, right? I mean, in part, yes, sometimes she's barking at you to throw the stick, throw the stick, throw the stick. And Tootsie, our Cavalier, is barking at us to, like, take her out, well, more likely to, like, feed her in some way. It is one of the reason it's so tricky is because it is about emotional arousal. And once they get aroused, they sort of fall over a cliff and they have less control over it. It's not that they can't control it, but it's hard for them to control too. It's just the personality of some dogs is such that when they get over a certain level of emotional arousal, they start barking. They just do. It's sort of one of their expressions of being excited. You know, when Willie's excited, he flips in circles. So when your dog is excited. So one, first of all, you mentioned the last thing you mentioned is just get used to it. Honestly, there's nothing wrong with that, especially in in this kind of barking. It's not like she's barking aggressively at a stranger. She's barking because that's what she does when she's excited. So if she's doing it when you're throwing a stick at home, the problem is that it's bothering you, right?
Yeah.
And I'm so sound sensitive, so believe me, I am so sympathetic to that. But if you could, one way to try and deal with it is to try and reframe it. It's like, she's happy, she's healthy, yay. I'll actually like sing to myself. It's like, la, 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 la. So, you know, other prevention or sort of management is, if it's about throwing the stick, is there another way to exercise her? You know, I don't throw sticks for Maggie anymore, in part because of an injury, but also she just, it didn't relax her, it wound her up. And this
made
is true
it worse.
Of, it, yeah, this is true of a lot of dogs. It hypes them up problematically. So if you have other ways of exercising her, and here's one how-to solution for you, which is, rather than throwing a stick, hide it. Turn her onto her nose. If she's using her nose, she's less likely to be barking. So teach her to find it. Go outside wherever you play, fetch, show her the stick, have somebody hold her on a leash, or you teach her a good downstay, put her on a downstay, go not very far away, hide the stick, and say, find it. If you do it when she can see it right away, she'll learn really fast. And then she'll start learning to look for it as you hide it farther and farther away. It's a great way of giving a dog both mental and physical exercise.
Yeah, I like and that.
And they are way less likely to bark. So try that one thing and see if that helps. And then call us back next time I'm on. Seriously. And let us know how it's going.
Thanks very much, Carolyn, for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest today. Always great to have her with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of animal behavior issues with your dog, especially with our guest today, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker and author. She's got a wonderful blog. It's called Patricia.
It's called The Other End of the Leash.
I know. I wanted you to say it. It's called The Other End of the Leash, and it is a fabulous blog and one you definitely might want to look into if you've read her books already, or even if you haven't. That would be a wonderful thing for you to do. Questions for her, the number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Pat in Duluth, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the way you framed the New Year's resolution.
Oh,
I relate
you.
To each and every one of those.
We all do, I think.
I know. And this is about our little dog. He's a little terrier mix, a little rescue dog. And he goes crazy when the mailman comes, which sometimes happens. He thinks the mailman is there, and he's not. And so on good days, it'll just be one or two times where he goes crazy. But there are some days when it's, even if I'm in the house and I'm making a little noise and he thinks it's the door.
Mm-hmm.
So this New Year's, I made a resolution to look at his good qualities and be patient and tolerant. And that very day, I came home and he was already barking before I entered the house. And so I just was thinking, and it does seem like he, certain days he does it more often, and then he just gets upset with a lot of stuff, not just the mailman. You know, he thinks he hears them.
Yeah.
But we were kind of thinking about maybe trying to get like a fountain. I leave the radio on. It's Wisconsin Public Radio. I leave that on during the day, but we were thinking maybe in the living room where the mailman does come to that door, maybe getting a fountain or something that would have like that white noise. Do you think that might help? Or I don't know.
I envision this terrier playing in the fountain. I don't know. It's a very good question. I've never seen any research that would relate to it, a kind of a masking noise. I mean, there's research on music and what kind of effect it might have on behavior. I know in shelters, they did find that long, slow, soothing classical music, and actually some amazing species-specific music created by Dr. Charles Snowden from here in Madison.
Yeah.
They actually created species-specific music for cats and dogs and found that it doesn't sound, you know, it's not for humans at all. Mm-hmm. But it did seem to have an effect on increasing sleeping time, decreasing barking, etc. So if you were going to use sound, I would look into that rather than white noise or a fountain or something. But there's another thing you could do. The trickiest part is the fact that the mailman comes when you're not home. And if the dog is loose in the living room and the mailman comes to the door right at the living room, that's a problem because it's going to be hard to change that habit. If you could manage life in such a way that the dog wasn't in the living room when the mailman came, that would help, you know? So maybe teach him it's fun to be in another room when we're gone, stuff a Kong, a hollow toy, teach him to be in there a little bit, you know, chewing the food out of this hollow, safe toy. But that's prevention. But proactively, what I would try doing with this dog is teaching him a different response to the same trigger. So the trigger is the mailman, and he's starting to expand it, which often happens, by the way, regrettably. Mm-hmm. You know, it generalizes. So it's like any noise he thinks might be the mailman, and it gets worse and worse and worse. So it's not, and what's happening to you is not uncommon. What you want to try and do is pair the sound of the mailman and be very specific about what that sound is. You know, mm-hmm. think about it, record it, listen to it, watch it. Figure out what those environmental triggers are and then pair them with a different behavior. Think about, what do I want him to do? What do I want him to do? And so if you want him to go into another room, so what you're going to do is arm yourself with the best reinforcement ever, and it's probably going to be pieces of cut up meat, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's safe for him, that you know, his digestive system is going to handle, and just teach him one step of a different response. So the mailman parks, right? He hasn't come up to your door yet. He parks, and right before your dog starts to bark, you're going to lure him with the food in to go pick up a stuffed toy or something into another room. You're going to teach him a different response. Think about what you think that might be. Probably with a terrier, it might be like to go kill a fluffy toy or something like that. So gradually, you keep doing this when you have control over it, as the mailman gets closer and closer and closer, or you replicate as best you can sounds of the mailman coming, and you expect more and more from him each time, lots and lots of reinforcement, and again managing when you're not there in a way that he can't sort of replicate this behavior. So that's what I try.
And I can tell you a little about fountains. I have a fountain. For the cats, it's their water.
Absolutely.
They have
I
a
had
watering
one too, yeah.
And I don't know that it calms them, but when I'm sitting alone reading in the living room where the fountain is, having that water.
It calms you.
It calms me.
Larry's barking has decreased significantly in the last year. No, I so get that. I can absolutely imagine.
You're sitting in the living room, you're fairly close to the fountain, it's gurgling away, and you're reading a book. And
there are reasons people have fountains in gardens, and, you know, it's true. So my concern is this. I can just see this terrier wreaking havoc in somebody's living room, digging into the water.
Yeah,
right?
You're absolutely right.
So, yeah.
There you go, Pat.
Next time I'm on,
yeah.
If you're around, let us know. I love getting feedback, okay?
Thanks, Pat. Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Patricia. I have a problem with a young Malinois.
Okay.
And I know you helped me with one a number of years ago, so I understand they're smarter than I am.
Yeah. They're smarter than all of us. Don't worry.
This one we got from the Humane Society, and it was a lot younger than they had told us. So she's extremely active and extremely distracted. We've had her through a couple of classes. She loves to chase balls and that, but when you're in the yard doing it, if a dog goes by, a squirrel goes by, she's at the fence. I've had her raise the height of my fence by 3 feet because she cleared the other one with several feet to go with no effort.
I'm laughing sympathetically, believe me.
And I have a vet that wants to put her on Prozac, and I'm wondering if there's other distracting behavior things that we can get into that might work better than putting her on a drug.
Yeah, I would. I'm really glad you're asking. And of course, I need to say I'm not a veterinarian, so I don't give out advice about medicine. What I do happily give advice out about is talking to a veterinary behaviorist. Mm-hmm. So there, you can go to the I'm blanking.
American Society
of Veterinary
Behaviors.
AVMA, the AVMA,
AVMA
website, and then they have a site for their veterinary behaviorists, and that would be somebody your veterinarian would talk to. I would actually suggest your vet talk to them. I can tell you that first of all, let me just back up and talk about Malinois. Is one, you're so lucky, and two, I'm so sorry, because they are brilliant. They were. For people who don't know what a Malinois looks like, they look like a short-haired, very intense, extra prickier German Shepherd.
Hmm.
They are gorgeous. They are bred to be working dogs. They work search and rescue. They're a lot of protection dogs. They're military dogs. They're police dogs. They are bred to have a purpose, and they are bred to be ridiculously athletic.
Yeah.
Thus the fence.
Yeah, thus the fence.
So it sounds like you have, how old is your dog?
We were told it was a young adult. We got it home, got a good look at it, and figured it was maybe 8 or 9 months.
And how old he is now?
The chest hadn't fallen yet. And
so there he is.
At this point, she's about 13, 14 months old.
So I have to tell you, everything you've described to me is a normal 13-month-old Malinois. I mean, it just doesn't, you know, maybe this is really brief, and so I would normally spend an hour and a half with you as an evaluation, but this just doesn't sound like abnormal behavior to me. Is there something that feels truly abnormal beyond an extremely active...
In the house with training and stuff, she's, you know, it's outside where she gets distracted.
Yeah.
That sounds like normal behavior. You have a teenager.
Yeah.
Right? You have a teenager. I would talk to your vet again. I would suggest your vet talk to a veterinary behaviorist, because I'm not seeing anything that seems abnormal. You know, fluoxetine can be very effective in cases of dogs who have obsessive compulsive disorder, for example. But this just doesn't
sound abnormal. On the other hand,
if
it's a normal dog, do you want to...
I can't give out medical advice.
Sure.
But I would... This sounds like a normal dog behavior to me. So I think what you need is a really great progressive trainer to come in, do some house calls, you know, get somebody who's progressive, who knows how to use positive reinforcement, who's not going to fall down the dominance alpha black hole, because that could be disastrous, frankly. But you know, you need somebody who can help you set boundaries in a respectful, positive way. And to understand sort of different phases of life. You know, you got a dog much younger than you thought it was, and now it's acting, you know, like a, I don't know, 13-year-old girl or 15-year-old boy, not to be anthropomorphic or anything. But, you know, at this age, what dogs need is they need a lot of emotional control. They need to learn how to contain their own arousal levels, like
mm-hmm.
most. Everybody who grows up in a society needs to learn how to deal with emotional arousal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's part of
yeah.
what we teach our children.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's part of when people don't have it, horrible things happen. We see that all the time, that, you know, in the news. So your dog needs to learn emotional control, but is struggling with it because he's 13 months old. You know, he's a kid. So that's what I would do. I really think you have a dog who sounds totally normal. And if you get the right help, this too shall pass.
And looking at Patricia's 5 points, be realistic and expect setbacks.
There you go. Thank you, Larry.
Good luck.
Good luck, Bill.
Thank you so much. Jim and Stevens Point, we'll go to you. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Let's go back to terriers for a minute. I adopted a terrier, a Karen Terrier, when she was about 1.5 years old. She's about 3 years old now. And she's progressively gotten worse when I take her for walks. And I do as much avoidance as possible. If
sure.
I see somebody down the street, I turn left rather than go straight. But is there anything else I can do about that issue?
Yes. And I can tell you that professionally and personally, because I had a dog, Willie, who loved people, but every time he saw an unfamiliar dog, even four blocks away, he pretty much lost it. Flipping and barking and slaughtering. I mean, just he was like out of control. So I actually have a booklet called Feisty Fido that has a program that fits all the New Year's resolutions. It's realistic, it's specific, that has a program of teaching dogs to basically change their behavior to the same trigger. So, you know, you hear me say that word trigger a lot.
Yeah.
Basically, a lot of influencing behavior is figuring out what is the environmental stimulus that creates the behavior. How can you modify the environment to manage that? And how can you, in a controlled setting, change the reaction to that trigger into something you want? So I taught Willie, and this is described in my book at Feisty Fido. You can get it on my website. And basically, you set up a situation where you know there's another dog behind a fence, for example. So you have a neighborhood street. You know where there's a dog four blocks away. You walk towards that area, but before your dog reacts, before there's barking, you start teaching your dog to look at you, for example, when you say look. So I used watch with Willie, actually. I'd say watch, and without any distractions, I first taught him watch, and when he'd look at me, first I'd prompt him, watch, you know, something to get him to look at you, and the second he would, I'd say good, and I'd give him a treat. Eventually, I ended up with a toy because he responded better to a tug game with me than a treat. But so I'd reinforce him for looking at me, and then gradually I'd ask him to look at me when he saw another dog. But first, the dog was way away. You know, don't wait till they're barking and slathering and out of their minds.
Yeah.
Because that's like asking a kindergartner to do algebra. You know, you can't go. People say, well, I tried that and it doesn't work. It's like, well, you tried it at the wrong time. You need to back up. Try it when there's a possibility of success. And do that over and over and over again a lot. What you're looking for is what I call an auto watch. And again, the details are described in the booklet. But an auto watch basically means that the dog looks at you without you prompting him. So you're walking towards another dog. This is the way to get started, is you say, watch, he looks at you, give a treat. And then the dog looks back at this other dog, right? People say like, oh no, but he turns his head and looks back. I say, yay, that means you have another training trial. That's great. So you say, watch again, he looks at you, you give him a treat. Looks at the dog, you say, watch again, he looks at you, gets a treat, and then he looks back at the dog, and you don't say anything, and you wait for it. You wait in hopes that he's going to turn his head to you. It's like, you gave me a treat for looking at you three times in a row. So, yo, hey.
Yeah.
So he looks at you like, yo, where's the treat? And you're like, bingo, jackpot, give him 10 treats in a row. Good dog, woohoo, good dog. And they're like, oh. So what you're looking for is them to learn to look at you when they see another dog. They can look at you, you can back up, they can sit, they can take a toy. You figure out what the other behavior you want. But it's very effective. I've had literally hundreds and hundreds of clients who we work through this program with them, and it works great.
And how does he get a copy of the book again?
Oh, thanks, Larry. Just go to my website, Google my name. You'll go to my website, Patricia McConnell, go to shop, and there's a booklet called Feisty Fido.
And thank you very much, Jim, for calling. You know, Charles emailed with a comment I think is quite interesting. He was commenting on the caller who had the terrier and mailman problem. He had the same issue with his dog, and what he did to solve the problem was to move the mailbox to an external mailbox on a post.
Oh, Charles, if I wasn't married to the most wonderful man in the world, I would ask you to marry me. That is absolutely beyond brilliant. Don't you love that? You know, I just love that. Sometimes people can get lost in these elaborate training paradigms. Like, I have to make my dog perfect. And it's like, sometimes it's like, wow, you can move your mailbox. I love it. Now, I'm not sure you can do that everywhere.
No.
But hopefully.
It's a darn good suggestion.
Oh, it's a great suggestion, Charles. I love you.
Let's take another call. Dan in Drummond, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Well, I myself don't have any pets. But where I live, there are therapy animals that I visit with almost every day.
Oh, great.
There's one lady that has a male cat, that just loves watching PBS on TV.
I love it.
I've seen them sit and look up at the TV.
Now, or there's some shows he likes better. Do you like? I know there are quite a few animals who like to watch animals on television. Have you noticed? Is the dog watching or the cat watching Victoria, or is he watching, you know, the nature special?
Tiger, one of my cats, loves the Masters Golf Tournament, or pretty much any golf tournament, but
hysterical.
He really loves the Masters Golf Tournament.
That is all projection, Larry.
I have that.
Mueller loves golf, so let's just get real here.
I have that on when the Masters Tournament comes on in the spring. He jumps up and sits on the mantle and watches the tournament.
And I like, my mouth is open wide right now. Larry's looking at me like, are you okay? Because I read, I've gotten into golf. I can't play it at all, but I like, believe it or not, watching it on TV. I read a book about golf, and they described the Masters. And I have always loved watching the Masters, in part because of the grounds are so beautiful. And the bird song.
Yeah, the bird song.
And you know what? It's piped in.
Yeah, it
that's
was.
That's not real birds. And that's, I'm wondering if that's part of why your cat loves
it may
watching,
be,
do you
it
think?
May well be. In fact, CBS at one point, this is getting off the top.
I know.
But CBS at one point had, during the Masters Tournament, got a bunch of calls from people, and they had to make a formal apology because the bird songs that they were piping in were not
did
birds.
Did not live there.
Didn't live there. And birders were calling and saying, you.
They got caught.
They got caught. So now the bird songs that you hear are birds from that
They're
area.
At least native. That is hysterical.
Anyway.
The world is a strange place.
The world is indeed a strange place. Speaking of not so strange things, I need to remind you that our guest today is Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. Got a great blog. It's called The Other End of the Leash. I hope you'll take a look at it. She's got a great website. That book she talked about and all of her other books are up on it, too. Just type in Patricia McConnell and it's going to pop right up. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your pet's behavior and how maybe animal training can help you with your own New Year's resolutions today. As we visit with Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, I'm Larry Mueller. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sally in Boyceville has something for us, Patricia, so let's go there. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have a standard poodle. I'm training as my service dog. He's just lovely. I love him. He's going to be 3 in the end of March, but he does not ride in the car well.
Mm.
He pants the whole time. I've tried CBD oil. I've tried, you know, all sorts of different types of things, but I can't seem to get him so that he just is calm. He's calm everywhere else. I mean, He's a wonderful dog.
Good. So, yeah, that's good. It's just one specific issue, you know, rather than a raft of them, because service dogs, we expect so much of them. You know, there are very few dogs who actually can qualify as good service dogs because we expect them to be so stable. So I'm sorry you have this problem, but I'm glad it's so specific. So obviously, you know, panting is a sign of nervousness. It's a sign of sort of nervous high arousal. So you're absolutely right to be aware that your dog is uncomfortable in the car. Have you tried but very often, let me back up a little bit, very often the reason dogs are nervous in a car is because of what they can see. Things go by so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget reading about a woman who was brought from a hunter-gatherer society in South America to civilization, and the first time she was in a car, she literally lost it because she'd never seen the world go by that fast, and her brain couldn't process it. And I think that's what happens with a lot of dogs. So there are a couple of things you can do to damp that down. There's a kind of a, it's, it, it's sort of like, it's like a hood you put on dogs. I can't think of the name of it because I'm 70 now and my brain is like so lame now. But my memory has gotten worse and worse. But you can look it up online. There's basically a hood that dogs can still see through a little bit, but it damps down a lot of the details. You can just slip it over your dog. You can teach them easily to put it on. You just sort of like slide their nose through, attach it behind their ears, give them a lot of treats, take it off, get them used to it. That was actually to stop dogs from barking in cars.
Oh.
Trish King, a colleague of mine, Trish King, developed it. She did a phenomenal job with it. And everybody in the field was like, thank you, Trish, because it's amazing. So that helps a lot of dogs. The other thing to do is put the dog in a crate and then cover the crate with blankets. So that's what I would try.
Yeah.
But I would ease my way up to it. So I wouldn't just like, oh, let's go on a regular 30-minute drive like we normally would do. I would go on a 30-second drive with this, with a crate or the hood. And then go somewhere the dog loves and play. If you could go somewhere, park, and then let your dog out and play, that would be the ideal thing. It's like, oh, we're going to go to a play session. That's great, rather than we're going to work. So give that a try.
And thanks very much, Sally, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Rick in Rhinelander, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Rick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a reformed dominance theory dog trainer. I train waterfowl retrievers.
Good for
and
you.
Yeah, I'm persuaded. Clickers and all that, and I don't force fetch or do any of the things that seem to be so popular with most waterfowl retriever trainers. However, I read two of your books and enjoyed them both, and I'm enjoying this conversation. But I do want to take a little bit of issue or maybe ask you a question.
Sure.
I do think there still is a place for aversion training and training dogs, and we've had to resort to that and in very minor ways. So, for instance, a barking problem we have, got a wonderful golden right now, very high-drive dog, a lot of prey drive, very affectionate dog, wonderful dog, but would bark uncontrollably, get aroused and as a pup. And my wife, who trains agility dogs, talked to one of her agility trainers, and she said, you know what really works? If we tried all the distractions and the treats and all the other things, but if you have a really intractable problem, just get a Windex bottle full of water and use that. Squirt the dog when there's inappropriate barking. And I have to tell you, it worked very, very well. And now that dog, we have three dogs, is the one that almost looks at the other dogs when they bark in an inappropriate manner. And he's like, guys, quiet down. Squirt it with the water,
love it.
You know?
I love
and
it.
So my question to you is, I mean, there is, I think there's a role, although it's a last resort, and I like to minimize it for aversion training as opposed to all positive. I'm just curious as to whether you agree with that statement or do you believe that positive training works in all cases?
I am so glad you called. Is it, wait, Rick?
Rick,
it's
yes.
It's Rick. Rick, thank you so much. Can we talk about this for the next 45 minutes, Larry? Maybe not? Okay, so, there's so many things I want to say besides thank you. Let me just start with, this is highly controversial in the dog training field right now. You know how the world is polarized? Well, so is dog training. Mm-hmm. I've actually been criticized. I actually had a young woman send me an email and say, do you think body blocks, which is something that I use, which basically you're just, for example, you're teaching a dog to stay, you ask them to sit and stay, put your hand out for the stay, and once they've had some background training and a good foundation, if they get up to move forward, you just move your body forward literally like 3 inches to just sort of move forward and basically block the space. It's like, I own this space. And she said, do you think they're aversive? And I said, well, they're aversive in the sense that a dog doesn't get what it wants at that second, but dogs understand it instantly. It's not scary or painful if you do it right in any way. And they instantly get reinforced with a tasty treat as soon as you do that for staying. Mm-hmm. So, no, in that sense, I don't think it's aversive at all. And then she said, well, I agree with you. And I don't agree with all those people who say that your work is worthless now because you use aversion training. So there is a group of people who are 100% positive. I am not one of them. So that's number one. I absolutely agree, and all of the colleagues that I respect agree with you, that punishment, which is what, aversion training, right? There's some kind of aversion is the last thing that should be tried at the lowest possible level. There are so many things to try before that. So I absolutely agree with that. Thirdly, when I was talking to the woman about the barking dog, I literally made a decision. I thought, should I talk about other methods? No, I don't really feel like I have time. But so I thought of that too. I'll tell you one thing about water bottle squirting. Mm-hmm. Some dogs adore it. Yeah. Oh, wow, that's fun. I love water in my face. Some dogs, if they're shy and soft, can get afraid of you if you walk towards them with your hand out, which makes them afraid of strangers reaching their hand out to pet them. So there, you know, are some possible downsides. But you are absolutely right. I use a verbal signal. I'll say, if Maggie is sheep herding, for example, and she's 100 yards away from me, and she'll do something that is incorrect, I will say, hey. And she's so soft, that's all I need to do, usually. So, but that's aversion, right?
That's aversion,
you know, that's a rough, gruff voice. And so I think it is appropriate sometimes. You know, for barking, there are spray collars, citronella collars that spray citronella in their face. There are electric shock collars that give them a shock for barking. I am not fond of those. I've seen way too many dogs get in trouble with those. But so I think your point overall is really, really important, that it's the last thing that we should try, but there are occasions when it's absolutely appropriate.
Now, would you think it's aversion training in what I do with my cats? If the cat, Tiger's up on the counter, all I have to do is pick up a spray bottle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because, and he jumps off.
Absolutely. That's aversion. And another word for that in operant conditioning paradigms in psychology is positive punishment. And people get thrown by the positive because we think of positive mean good and happy. And it doesn't mean it in that context. It was poorly named. It means adding something into the mix to decrease the frequency of a behavior. So a squirt bottle adds something, right?
Yeah.
To decrease the frequency of barking or jumping up on the counter. So that's a classic example of positive punishment or aversion training.
And I've never sprayed that cat with it, but, you know, if I'm cleaning something, it's in a cleaning bottle. And
the noise is often enough.
It's the noise that gets him going.
And, you know, and is you know, would people say that's the best technique? Works for some cats, not for others, but are Larry's cats traumatized? I highly doubt it.
No.
I highly doubt it.
They leave the area, but then they're back and walking around and rubbing on your leg. So, well, Terry and Brown Deer, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I have a Lasso Apso mix. That is the sweetest thing. He's a great dog in every other aspect. The retirement homes love him, but he hates my husband.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And he will and we've had him for 8 years. And I also have a large Newfoundland that he's best friends with at sometimes, but growls at him, too. And he does this vicious, you know, and then he'll either run under the bed or he'll just run into another room whenever my husband's around, and I can't figure it out.
And your husband puts up with this? This man is a saint.
I know. It's been a rough road. But
so, number one, go buy your, you know, buy whatever your husband, the best dinner ever made, you know, in the history of marriage, right? But so, wow, this is a long time, and so obviously that's going to make it harder to turn this around. What have you tried? Can you give me a succinct list of things you've tried?
Well, we've tried, but I can't say we've gone with any consistency because my husband just gets fed up. But we have resorted to putting him now in a cage at night next to my bed because he would try or act like he was going to eat my husband's legs off when he came to bed. And even in the cage, some nights he barks and goes insane when he comes to bed because I usually go to bed earlier.
Yeah.
And
So that's a management, and good for you. You know, management is always a reasonable thing to do, but it doesn't necessarily change the behavior. Have you tried One of the things you mentioned that is a challenge for all of us is it's been hard for you to keep up consistency. So my sympathy there, but I do want to encourage you to try and do that. I mean, I would pair your husband. Your husband's the trigger, right? He's the environmental stimulus that's creating this behavior. I mean, it's not that your husband's fault. And so what you need to do is to pair the approach of your husband with something wonderful. So what does your little dog love? Food or play more? And I mean great food.
He loves sausage.
There you go. All right. Hey, you're in Wisconsin. You're in a good place. There's sausage everywhere. So you're going to take really good, high-quality sausage. You're going to cut it up into tiny little pieces. You're going to decrease his dinner by a little bit. You're going to start slow so you don't disrupt his digestive system. And you're going to ask your husband to just sort of appear at a doorway and either toss pieces of sausage and then go away, right? And so he needs to do that like 5 times in a row. Or you're going to toss sausage. It's better if your husband does it, but you can do it too.
Mm-hmm. And you keep doing that for...
If you could get a coach in, that would be great. You know, we all, the best athlete in the world has a coach, right? Don't ever feel badly about bringing in a professional animal trainer. Just make sure they're progressive, that they know how to use positive reinforcement. So that's, I think you'd be really smart to have a coach in just to help for a couple of sessions. Wouldn't be that expensive.
And good luck, Terry. Thank you so much for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest, she's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. Patricia, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, and author of several books, The Other End of the Leash, For the Love of a Dog, The Education of Will, A Mutual Memoir of a Woman and Her Dog. We'll be back right after this look at the news. You please stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, and author. It's always great to have her come by to take a look at animal behavior issues. We've talked a bit today about how animal training can help you with your own New Year's resolutions, and it's been a lot of fun. Our lines are all filled, so we're just going to go directly to the phones. And Monty in Duluth, Minnesota, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So we have this wonderful 12-and-a-half-year-old male purebred Norfolk Terrier named Snickers.
Aww.
And a wonderful pet. But it seems even before there's any audible or visual indication of a thunderstorm, he starts barking. And as it gets closer and closer, it gets wild, and he's running up and down the stairs, won't quit barking. It can last 3 hours. And especially if it's at night, we get no sleep. But, I mean, more than that, we worry that he's going to have a heart attack. And we've tried placing him in a room where there's no windows, doesn't work. Tried placing him in a dog cage, a pet cage. It doesn't work. He just barks. It's absolutely – and then in the morning – when we have to get up for work and the thunderstorm's over, he crawls into bed and says, I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
And then you have to get up and go to work, right?
Yeah. So this has been happening ever since he was a puppy. So is there anything that you can do about that?
There are some things you can try. And the first thing I want to say is there's, as sympathetic as I am, and I'm very sympathetic to both you and him, don't get me wrong, but isn't there a little part of you that just loves that kind of terrier spirit that's like, I'm going to bark you away. You know? It's like, I don't know who you are, but get out of here. A very famous biologist, I once said in answer to my question, why are dogs so afraid of thunder? He said, because God is growling at them. And I mean, that is what it is. You know, growls are low frequency. Mm-hmm. And you can use it to your advantage. If you want to get serious with your dog, if you say something in a lower frequency voice, they pay more attention to it.
Yeah.
You know? It's a little more seriousness. But I really credit you for being concerned about your dog as well as yourself, because a 12-and-a-half-year-old dog who is going this crazy. You know, a lot of people forget that, you know, when dogs get up there, it gets more and more dangerous for them to behave the way they used to. So a couple things you can do. And one thing you can do is you can talk to your veterinarian. There are medications you can use that damps dogs down a little bit. The problem is you usually need to give them well before a storm comes. So that means you need to be home, right? You know, you can't just give it a half an hour
before
the storm.
Need to know the weather forecast.
You need to know the weather forecast. So it can be very helpful, don't get me wrong. And there's some anti-anxiety medications that you give your dog on a daily basis that work sort of all the time. That's something you could consider and talk to your veterinarian or veterinary behaviorist about. There are a lot of behavioral things you can do, though, too. The kind of classical counter-conditioning that I've done with clients and with my own dogs, by the way, takes a little bit more time, but basically you're teaching a different response to the same environmental stimulus. The trick with your dog, like many dogs who get anxious or afraid or barky when a big storm comes in, is that they back chain. And what back chain means is that responding to earlier and earlier environmental changes. So, for example, you said before it even starts to thunder or lightning, your dog starts to go crazy. It's going crazy. Either there are a lot of stimuli. One could be the wind comes up. Two, it gets darker. But the big one that cues a lot of dogs is the barometer drop.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of clients. The first thing I tell them is buy a barometer, and start paying attention to how your dog behaves. So you start, basically the first thing you do is you start, one, you create a safe environment for them when a storm comes up and you can't actually do any counter conditioning. So, you know, one room might not be enough. Maybe it's a crate within a room. Maybe it's a closet within a room. You basically teach them, if you run in this closet, in this back room with no windows or all the windows shut, where the sound is damped down the most, you'll get steak. You know, and so you can teach them a different response. If you run into this other room, wonderful things will happen. That can work. You can also teach them, you love it when thunder happens because wonderful things happen then too. So if there's a little bit of thunder, they get a piece of steak and then another little piece of steak and divide it up into tiny little pieces. So it's that same idea that I talk about a lot of figuring out what the trigger is, and in your case, it's probably the barometer. You'll have to find out, but that's my guess. It's the best guess. And then starting to help your dog find a way to respond differently and reinforcing the heck out of it. I remember, Larry, when we were doing Calling All Pets, you may or may not remember this, but at one point, the producer came to me and said, don't you have anything to say besides giving dogs small treats as reinforcement? I said, not really. Because it is indeed the basis of changing behavior, of doing it in a step-by-step way, starting where it's easy, basically creating success. It's like teaching a child to read. You don't start by giving them War and Peace, right? It's like teaching basketball or, you know, any sport. You don't start by expecting to play in the NBA. So tiny little steps, lots of reinforcement. But you can all, you know, again, don't hesitate to talk to your veterinarian as well. Figure out your options and choose the best one.
And thanks, Monty, for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in River Falls, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate this program. I've been listening for decades and always enjoy it when Patricia's on. So my question is, and my first question, if I can have two, I'd like two as well. But we recently, in November, beginning of November, my daughter, we lost our last dog in summer, and she wanted to do some agility training and competing. And so she had found a 4-year-old Australian Shepherd that had been with several breeders, and we ended up getting her. And then about the same time, actually before I picked that dog up, we went to Humane Society down in Waukesha, and there was a border collie mix, pretty much border collie, but she might have some greyhound in her too. She's a little thinner and she's really fast, that we ended up getting too, and she's about a year old. The Aussie is intact, and we may breeder. She's papered, but the border collie was stayed when we got her. We also have my daughter also has a lot of chickens, and they're not terribly aggressive towards them, but particularly the border collie, she just, you know, stares them down, and both of them have grabbed some feathers. My last two dogs I had to do some aversion training. I just flipped them on their back and really scared them the one dog one time, the other dog twice, and they stayed away from the chickens. Tried that once with a border collie and once with the Australian Shepherd, and they don't, the Australian Shepherd's a little better, but the border collie doesn't quite get it. And I'm just wondering what your suggestions are.
Oh, first of all, thanks for listening to Larry's show.
Yeah.
Such a dedicated way. I, too, am a dedicated fan. I love listening to Larry's show. But I'm really glad you called, because you have, you know, let me just focus on the border collie for a second, because it sounds like that's a bit of a larger problem. And I'm guessing that it is, too, based not just on what you said, but on knowing border collies, is that border collies didn't always read the chapter about what individual type of livestock they're supposed to herd.
Yeah.
And so Willie, my border collie, my older one, thinks that cats are appropriate. He never does it outside, but when he's in the house, he used to herd cats when they were in the house. And so Maggie, my other border collie, literally corrected him for it. Literally. It was hysterical. The first day they were together in the house after I got her, she did a muzzle punch and said, "Don't ever go after this cat." I have no idea where that came from. So that solved that problem. So I could loan you Maggie, but I probably wouldn't. But so one, don't try the flipping over on the back again, okay? It's going to, my best guess is it's going to harm your relationship with your border collie a lot. Border collies, again, some of them pay attention to chickens or cats or ducks as animals to herd, others don't. And it seems to just sort of come along with the genetic mix that you've got. So I would do tons of management, first of all. I would go way out of my way to eliminate the trigger. So the chickens are behind something the dogs can't get through. The dogs can't go out, aren't out loose when you're not right there. And so when you're there, the good news is because you have an Australian Shepherd and Border Collie, they're some of the easier dogs to train in that there's lots of reinforcement you can use. You can use play, you can use food, you can use belly rubs, you can use let's go on a walk. But basically, every time your border collie and Aussie looks at the chickens, I want your daughter, and again, in a structured step-by-step way, first you start very long way away from the chickens, to say watch or look, or, you know, best would be where's your toy? Go get your toy. And she has a toy in her hand, and the second one of the dogs turns around and looks at her, and she can prompt it with or hand claps or waving a toy or running the other way. You get the dog to look at you and instantly reinforce it with, say, a tug game or playing fetch if that's what you do. So every time the dog looks at a chicken, you are going to teach it to the chicken is a trigger, like a cue, to turn around and get to play a let's go find the toy game. And so you can change this behavior into something that's good and useful. But again, you have to do it consistently. You know, you have to be really on it for a couple of months. But they're young, you know, and your daughter wants to learn about training. Here you are.
That's
it's not always about the fun stuff. You're going to get a dog who's good at agility. You're going to get a dog who's going to get into trouble if you don't redirect their motivation and their drive in the right way.
There you go. Thank you. And good luck, Jim. Thanks so much for calling. And let's take another call. John in Richland Center will give you a chance. Hi, John.
Hi. I live in the woods. My closest neighbor is over a quarter mile away.
Got it.
And my dog is tethered so he can get to his food and in his house. But I hear three times a week, I hear a whole pack of coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear them right through the walls of my house. They've already got four large geese and two cats of mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I am worried about my dog.
Me too.
And they say don't name a dog Lucky, but
no. I'm worried about your dog, too. And also, and you may not like this, but I just have to be straight with you and tell you I'm not a fan of tethering dogs.
Yeah.
It makes them literally staked out and completely vulnerable to anything else that happens in the environment. And it tends to make dogs very commonly defensively aggressive or fearful or problematic in some way. So I'm just not a fan. If you could consider building your dog, if the dog has to be outside, you know, in the ideal world, I would say teach your dog to be inside and be comfortable and not be destructive and not go potty in the house. But sometimes that's not an option for people. I would build a kind of a kennel for your dog so your dog is, one, not tied up to something. And build it in such a way that there's at least two sides that are protected by a wall so they don't feel like they're sitting in the middle of the world with having to be vigilant about what's happening around them on all four sides. And, you know, I think it's useful to be anthropomorphic in this mm-hmm. sense. Put yourself in that situation and imagine how safe you would feel if you were stuck outside somewhere and you knew it was dangerous and you always had to be looking in all four directions. So create a kennel for your dog that is not tethered, he's free, he can't get out of. So, you know, be really careful because your dog is going to be better at getting out at something that you think it is. So don't go halfway. If you're going to do it all the way. You know, you can even go on Craigslist and buy, you can buy used stainless steel kennels. So create a kennel and get your dog off the tie out. I am worried that given that the coyotes are coming into your yard, I am worried that he too is at risk. And even if he's not at risk of coyotes, he's at risk of developing behavior problems later on because he is in a position of being so vulnerable.
Yeah, that makes really good sense.
And thank you for calling. I'm so glad you did.
Thank you very much, John, for calling. Christine in Boscobel has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I have a 12-year-old Alaskan Malamute. I was able to train her with a dog trainer to be a service dog. And she's retired now, and she's always had another dog in the house, and the last dog we had passed away. Mm. So we went to rescue to look for another male Malamute and actually ended up with a male Siberian Husky. And he's about 7.5 years old. He had one owner and was the only dog in the house that he was in. And we've been introducing him to our household. We got him in August. He seems to be doing well, but he's still guarding resources occasionally.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering how we can best deal with that.
Yeah, good question. That's a problem a lot of people have, you know? So I'm really glad you called because we haven't talked about it so far in this show, and it's a very common problem. You know, your dog gets something maybe you don't want him to have or something he can have, but you walk by and you get a growl or a snarl or a lunge. So a couple of things. One, if you're a reader, there's a great booklet that Jean Donaldson, a colleague of mine, wrote, Jean Donaldson, called Mine, M-I-N-E, exclamation point. Mine. And she goes through a very detailed, it's a little too detailed for some people, but it's very thorough, which I love. It's very detailed, sort of step-by-step way of teaching a dog, again, a different response to a particular stimulus. So they have something that they want and you want. As you go towards them, you want to teach them to be like, oh, hi, I'm so glad you showed up. Because when you do, you know, when I have that chicken bone I got out of the garbage, when I have the underwear I pulled out of the laundry, when you have visitors for dinner, when I have that in my mouth and you come towards me, I get something better. And so that's the key, is again in the step-by-step way to teach them that if they have something that's a valued treasure, a high quality resource, if you approach them and reach your hand out, something even better is going to happen. So start again, start with success. Your dog has something that they don't care that much about. You know, it's a toy. It's like, it's okay, toy. And so you're going to reach your hand, not too close to the dog, but sort of towards your dog, you know, maybe four, your hand's 4 feet away from the dog's head. And if the dog drops the toy, you're going to reach your other hand around that has some chicken or steak or something wonderful in it, sausage or something wonderful in it, and you're going to give the dog that wonderful reinforcement. If the dog doesn't drop the toy, you're going to do the same thing anyway, and you're going to put that food right by their mouth, and they will drop it to eat that treat, right? Mm-hmm. And then you pick up the whatever it is, the object, give them some more treats. If you can and it's safe, I love to advise people to give them that object back. I'm not going to take that away from you forever. If it's a chicken bone from the garbage, you got to take it away, right? Cooked chicken bones are very dangerous to dogs. They can splinter. They're very dangerous. But if it's a sock from the laundry, give them the sock back. Mm-hmm. And then it gives you a chance to do it again. So they have the sock. Don't chase them, right? If they're going to like, woohoo, I get to play chase game. I love this. They're running after me and I have the sock in my mouth. Don't do that. Wait until you can sort of sidle up to them. Again, you've got something wonderful in your mouth. You're going to trade. You give me the sock, I will give you something even better. And it's not bribing them. It's teaching them a different behavior. And eventually you put it on cue. So you can say, drop it. Good dog. And you're not always going to have a treat in your hand. You don't need it when you train it the right way. Gradually, you just start dropping the treat out. And or you vary the treat. So you can't ever use food all the time.
Yeah.
Successfully, because sure. You don't always have it, and no, most dogs aren't hungry all the time, although some dogs are. They're like me and chocolate. It's like, oh yeah, I'm not hungry. Oh yeah, now I'm hungry if there's chocolate. But so intersperse, you know, once you've got it started with food, which is the best way to get things started, then it's let your dog chase you. You're going to do belly rubs. You're going to do a tug game. You're going to play fetch. You're going to run. You're going to go outside. You're going to do something your dog loves that's reinforcement for dropping on cue.
And what about if the other dog, what about if it's the relationship between the other dog, the two dogs?
Oh, good point. I was thinking person. Let's ask our caller. Is it? Christine, is it about the two dogs, or is it? Did I go off on a tangent that's completely irrelevant?
No, you're fine.
oh, okay.
The dogs seem to be doing okay.
Good.
Maya is definitely wanting to be alpha, and of course, he was ruling his household, and they seem to have come to an understanding.
Good. Okay. Well, that's a relief to me because it's harder to do between two dogs. It's possible, but it would have taken longer. So, phew. All right. Yay.
Well, I am glad to know that was the case because we are kind of starting to run out of time a little bit.
No, we just started.
Well, tell us about your blog a bit.
Oh, sure. I am actually backing down from doing a lot of things. I'm only doing one more training seminar at Oakland University on February 1st outside of Detroit. But I'm taking this little sabbatical. But one thing I am not taking a sabbatical from is my blog. There's this village. There's this village of people all around the world who care about the same things I seem to care about. It's about relationships between people and animals. You know, sometimes it's a training blog. A lot of times it's about something bigger or deeper. So it's the other end of the leash, and it's a really fun village. I am not going to quit it. I love doing it.
And you are going to work on some, maybe becoming a fiction writer.
Well, I'm going to play at it. I have a 3-month commitment. That's as far as I'm going so far.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to your next visit, Patricia. Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Patricia McConnell, our guest certified applied animal behaviorist. Her blog is The Other End of the Leash. If you just type her name in, if you're interested in one of the books that she was talking about, just go to her website. You can order right off her website, type Patricia McConnell in. That website's going to pop up. Just to take a look at what's up tomorrow, we'll be talking about the upcoming Eagle Days event in Prairie du Sac. And that's at 11:45. We'll take a look at raptor rehabilitation. So hope you'll join us for that. But you know what? In the meantime, there's lots more in store here. So stay with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.